clearly, Secretary Pompeo is of the view that it's actually more important to tighten the alliance now.
The United States shores up South China Sea alliances. It's Wednesday, March 20th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. We invite you to stop by Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the shock of New Zealand's massacre continues to reverberate. Students swap stocks. A German automaker powers into Asia. Healthcare for all after a visit to a popcorn factory. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was on a visit to the Philippines March 1st, where he made comments that many experts thought demanded increased attention. Here's what he said.
As an island nation, the Philippines depends on free and unobstructed access to the seas. China's island building and military activities in the South China Sea threaten your sovereignty, security, and therefore economic livelihood, as well as that of the United States. As the South China Sea is part of the Pacific, any armed attack on Philippine forces, aircraft, or public vessels in the South China Sea would trigger mutual defense obligations under Article 4 of our Mutual Defense Treaty.
Zach Cooper is a research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, where he studies, among other things, U.S. defense strategy in Asia, U.S. alliances and partnerships in Asia. He's written a story that appears in Tuesday's Washington Post, headlined, "The U.S. Quietly Made a Big Splash About the South China Sea." VOA Asia's Ira Melman asked him what was so big about the splash the U.S. Secretary of State made.
Well, for years, many Americans and, in fact, friends in the Philippines as well had been suggesting that the United States should clarify its treaty commitment to the Philippines and make very clear that the South China Sea would be included in part of the treaty commitment that the U.S. has to the Philippines. And Secretary Pompeo, after years of Americans and Filipinos asking for someone to do this, finally made that statement.
Is that mark any kind of specific change as far as the U.S. posture toward the Philippines is concerned?
Well, I do think it shows that the United States is willing to accept more risk on behalf of the Philippines. The Obama administration had considered this decision and had chosen not to accept greater risk regarding the Philippines, in part because I think it was worried that the leaders in Manila might do something that leaders in Washington would see as overly risky. And now, clearly, Secretary Pompeo is of the view that it's actually more important to tighten the alliance now, rather, and even if that means risking a little bit of escalation between the Philippines and China.
That obviously leads to the question of how much escalation. What will this do to relationships between the U.S. and the Philippines, and secondly, between the U.S. and China?
Well, the hope for sure was that the U.S.-Philippine relationship would be stronger if the United States clarified its security treaty commitment. That is the argument that I and many others have made for several years, is that the problem with the U.S.-Philippine agreement in part is that it is very ambiguous and that China has been using that ambiguity to drive a wedge between the United States and the Philippines. And so the clear answer was to tighten the alliance by clarifying that commitment and accepting greater risk on behalf of the Philippines and the United States together as an alliance.
What about Duterte? What is his part in all this, and how are the relationships between the U.S. and the Philippines now?
Well, I think there certainly has been an uptick in the relationship in the last year or so. I think Secretary Pompeo's clarification was one signal. The return of the bells is another hugely important message from the United States.
Explain that, if you will.
Sure. So the Balinga bells had been taken by American soldiers in 1901 from the Philippines. And for years, friends in the Philippines had asked for the return of the bells. It was very politically difficult in the United States to actually make that happen. And the Trump administration went ahead and with substantial effort managed to get the bells returned to the Philippines, which I think was an important sign that the U.S. takes the U.S.-Philippine relationship seriously. So there are some definite positive signs. The negative, I think, in the relationship, there are probably two issues. One has been that even though the U.S.-Philippine alliance remains intact, we haven't seen the kind of close cooperation on the military side in a China context that I think we would need to feel very confident in the status of the alliance. And then the second issue is that President Duterte, as is well known, has made some very critical comments of American leaders, and those still are problematic in Washington.
Now, what about the relationship between the U.S. and China? What changes might be made here, and what does that do to China's stance in the South China Sea?
Well, I think we have to acknowledge that China is unlikely to give up its claims in the South China Sea. But what we can hope to do, in my view, is to dissuade Chinese leaders from challenging existing Philippine-held features. So, for example, Second Thomas Shoal, where there's a grounded vessel with Philippine Marines on it, it would be, I think, a strong demonstration to China that the U.S.-Philippines alliance is strong and should not be tested if the U.S. makes very clear that a armed attack on that vessel or the Marines there would trigger the U.S. defense commitment to the Philippines. And that is exactly what this statement by Secretary Pompeo does. So in my view, it makes the red lines clearer in the South China Sea. It tells China exactly what would trigger the U.S.-Philippine Mutual Defense Treaty. And I actually think that may decrease the chances of a conflict because it lets the Chinese know where not to push.
Zach Cooper, a research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman via Skype. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find when you log on to voanews.com right now. North Korea and United States spar over sanctions. Rights activists denounce China's Xinjiang white paper. Muslims and government officials plan next steps in Christchurch. Italy set to join China's Belt and Road Initiative. In Thai election, new war room policies, social media. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Attacks last Friday on Muslims worshiping at their mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand, have sent shockwaves throughout the Muslim world. VOA Turkish and Urdu language reporters visited Muslims in Washington, D.C., and reported their reactions range from fear and sadness to determination to stand up to terror. In response, mosques here in the United States have boosted their security during Friday prayers. VOA's Slotika Hoke has more.
The Anet Center of America in Lanham, Maryland, was founded in the 1990s by Turkish Americans to provide social and religious services to Turkish immigrants. Today, it is a large organization with affiliations across America. Its new campus in Lanham is an important cultural hub for the area's Muslims and visitors. Security was heightened after Friday's attacks in New Zealand, says Ahmed Aydilek, the head of the center.
We are asking people to be vigilant, but on the other hand, we are doing everything that we can to increase the safety of our people.
Hate groups are on the rise worldwide, including in the United States, fueling Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, and xenophobia, says Imam Naeem Mohammed Beg from Falls Church, Virginia.
But we have to be prepared. We are educating our community. We are helping our community to understand that these are the realities of New America, but we must adhere to our faith. We must not shy away from practicing our faith. We must not be fearful.
U.S. Muslims largely blame the news media and some political leaders for spreading divisive messages.
Some of these measures are trying to change the fabric of this country, which is not going to happen. Why? Because Muslims are really strong elements, strong part of this fabric. There are Muslims born and raised in this country for many decades. They are serving in the army. They are doctors. There are lawyers. There are Muslims in the In the fire department, there are Muslims in the police department.
U.S. President Donald Trump has condemned the New Zealand attacks and tweeted a message of condolences for the people of New Zealand. U.S. officials have offered help in investigating the attacks. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern is urging her lawmakers to join her in never uttering the name of the man accused of killing 50 worshippers at two Christchurch mosques last Friday. Authorities have accused 28-year-old Australian Brenton Harris Tarrant of committing the horrific attacks. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for listening. Some California students have created a virtual stock exchange for student companies, and all of it is simulated, but very realistic. As Mike O'Sullivan reports, the classroom project helps them understand financial markets as they learn about the challenges of business.
They consult with colleagues and pitch prospective clients. Their virtual company, called Invest, is a stock exchange based at San Juan Hills High School in California.
I think learning from books and notes and lectures is important, but this class gives you the opportunity to actually go out and perform.
The officers of the student company practice for a presentation. Their stock exchange exists in the classroom and online and uses virtual currency. It's based on the latest financial technology known as blockchain. It keeps a record of cryptocurrency transactions across computers linked to peer-to-peer networks.
So not only are they learning how to trade equities like they would in the real world, but they're also getting a little bit of exposure to blockchain technology, which is a type of finance management that they will face in the future.
The students are getting ready for a trade show in New York, like this one, sponsored by the nonprofit educational group Virtual Enterprises International. Students from around the United States showcase business projects. This student project goes a step further than other virtual businesses, allowing students to raise virtual money by selling stocks, just like on Wall Street.
And then we also have to look up things such as insurance policies, such as advertising. We have to create the monthly budgets, so we're able to make sure our money is being put out there efficiently.
Students face all the problems of running a business.
We have 26 employees, which is a lot for a brand new company. And so that's obviously been a big challenge for us.
With a big job title comes responsibility, says the student company's chief executive officer.
It's hard to be the CEO and have everyone look up to you and expect great things from you, especially when, you know, I am so young and I have so little experience of the business world. So it's been a little bit of a challenge to, you know, come into class and have a plan ready for everyone every day.
But the students say they're having fun while meeting the challenge and are learning how to run a business. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, San Juan Capistrano, California.
Coming up, power and videos hope to drive Asian markets. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news from VOA Asia, Taiwan, and the United States will hold talks later this year as part of upgraded efforts to counter Beijing's growing pressure on the island for political unification. The talks planned for September in Taipei will include a senior official from Washington. Unify your news awareness at VOA Asia Facebook each day. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, a German automaker hopes to electrify the Asian market, while Apple seeks to grow video streaming. These are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
German automaker Volkswagen is speeding up the rollout of electric car vehicles. it will start building its signature electric car, the ID, at a factory in Zwickau, Germany, and continue with 7 other factories worldwide, including 2 in China. Ralph Brandstetter is Volkswagen's chief operating officer.
The Volkswagen brand will show how climate-neutral automobility works. As Volkswagen's first electric car, the ID will be CO2 neutral for its entire lifespan. It will be made in a CO2 neutral way, and we are offering our customers 100% green energy via our daughter company, Elli. With the ID, we have made an environmentally friendly car that is also affordable. Its starting price lies at under 30,000 euros.
Market experts in Frankfurt say that Volkswagen has been lagging behind its competitors. Last year, the brand's operating margin fell to 3.8%, lagging behind peers such as Peugeot, which delivered a margin of 8.4%. Volkswagen's new electric vehicle rollout will impact jobs. The company has said it will create 2,000 new software jobs, as well as electronics positions in technical development. But it also plans to reduce the workforce in other areas. Ralph Brandstetter.
It's clear to both sides that with the increased automation of routine tasks, there will be less personnel needed. We estimate that 5,000 to 7,000 job vacancies created by departed employees would not be refilled.
The first electric car vehicle, the ID, will hit showrooms in 2020. Volkswagen hopes to become the world's biggest producer of electric cars by 2025. Netflix and Amazon will have a new rival in the streaming television sphere as Apple prepares to launch its own video service. The service will include both original programming and a subscription platform for other digital services. People familiar with the deal say Apple is in the process of negotiating with TV giants like HBO, Showtime, and Starz. Apple's most recent earnings report showed flat profits and falling revenue, with sales of its iPhone product going down. The company is hoping that the new focus on content delivery, including a new service called Apple News, will help revitalize its numbers. Consumers will be able to find the new service in the Apple TV app, currently available on iPhones and iPads. A tentative launch date has been set for April. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia. China has released a lengthy white paper that analysts say seeks to justify its anti-terrorism fight and de-radicalization measures in the western region of Xinjiang, where up to 1.5 million Uyghurs and other Muslim minorities are estimated to have been forced into detention. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, healthcare in the United States is again expected to be a deeply divisive issue in the 2020 U.S. presidential election, with Democrats pressing for more government involvement and Republicans warning of increased taxes and what they see as creeping socialism. But as VOA's Brian Patton reports, there are also competing proposals among Democratic candidates that advocate either transformational change to energize the progressive base or incremental progress to attract more moderate support.
Growing public support for health care programs helped the Democratic Party win control of the U.S. House of Representatives in the 2018 election, and advocates believe it will also help the party nominee in 2020.
Healthcare is a winning issue for Democrats. So I think any way that they focus on healthcare and solutions is going to be beneficial to them.
Republicans have had to fend off criticism that conservative efforts to cut government funding would deny care to many in need.
No one's trying to deny the sick healthcare. I think that's an important thing to clarify. What's important is how we achieve that.
The rising cost of health care continues to be a major concern in the U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders, who lost the Democratic presidential nomination in 2016, is again running on a promise to expand the government Medicare program for senior citizens to provide universal health care funded by increased taxes.
The goal of a rational health care system is not to make insurance companies billions in profits and CEO compensation for this, for their executives off the wall.
Other prominent Democrats supporting this expansion are California Senator Kamala Harris and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. But there are concerns that proposing a government takeover of the $2.5 trillion healthcare industry could alienate centrist voters in the general election. More moderate Democratic hopefuls such as Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar and former Vice President Joe Biden, who is still considering whether to run, endorse incremental measures like a government public option plan to compete against private insurance companies. But such an approach may alienate the party's progressive base, calling for transformational change. President Donald Trump has criticized Democratic healthcare proposals as socialist.
Democrat lawmakers are now embracing socialism. They want to replace individual rights with total government domination.
During the 2016 campaign, Trump promised not to cut assistance programs, but in this year's budget, the president proposed reducing funding for both Medicare and Medicaid, which provides medical assistance to the poor and disabled. Brian Patton, VOA News, Washington.
And you may need health care if you eat too much popcorn. Well, where is all that popcorn coming from? No U.S. state produces more than Nebraska. The factory called Preferred Popcorn smells like a giant movie theater, and it's a major producer here in the United States. Lesia Bacalets traveled to Nebraska to find out how it's all done. Presumably, she had a few samples. Anna Rice narrates.
Sam Krug is the second generation at Preferred Popcorn, a Nebraska factory that produces Americans' favorite movie snack. Here, fresh batches of popcorn are made every 15 minutes and immediately tested and tasted for quality.
Oh, I eat popcorn probably 5 times every single day, from early in the morning till the end of the day.
The whole process begins with growing the right kind of corn, not surprisingly called popcorn.
The big difference with corn and popcorn is popcorn has a lot of starch inside of it.
Uh-huh.
And has a very hard outer shell. You said that, right? The shell is hard, and so the starch, when you heat it up, mixes with the moisture in the kernel, and it boils inside of this, and it gets so hot, and the shell is so hard on the outside that it gets hotter and hotter and more excited and more excited, and eventually it just blows up.
Nebraska has perfect conditions for growing popcorn, including the right climate and plenty of water for irrigation. And you don't have to look far to find local farmers to work with. Andrew McHarg, who started driving a tractor when he was 9, harvests popcorn on his farm. He takes it to the factory where the kernels are sorted by weight, color, and size. Factory staff pop a sample of each batch to test it out.
We always pop at 480 degrees, and we always use exactly the same amount of oil when we're going to pop. So,
what type of oil is it?
This is, the industry standard is coconut oil. This was very good. This is a 47 expansion popcorn.
So this is platinum one,
that's
yeah?
That's a platinum. That's something that you would find in a movie theater anywhere around the world.
The factory sells kernels for different kinds of popcorn, depending on how the buyer plans to prepare it.
So this is the butterfly. You see, well, it looks like it has wings that go out like that. That's what gives it the high expansion. And this is the mushroom, so the round kernels for like caramel corn.
With caramel or without it, Americans eat more popcorn than any other nation in the world. The U.S. Popcorn Board says that in 2018, they consumed more than 14 billion liters of this snack. For Lacey Bacalets in Chapman, Nebraska, Anna Rice, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online, iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as VOA Asia Facebook, and of course, at our website, voanews.com, where you can find our full-length programs from today and days past. You'll also find us on the radio, Chiang Mai University, Radio FM 100, at Chiang Mai University in Thailand. Thanks to everyone there who's tuned in today. And of course, we thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Cedric Franklin, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a terrific day.